At 20 minutes past 7, a perfectly maintained Lincoln Town Car of late 70s vintage drew up to the curb in front of Lois's house. Ralph, who had spent the last hour showering, shaving, and trying to get himself calmed down, stood on the porch and watched Lois get out of the back seat. Goodbyes were said, and girlish, sprightly laughter drifted across to him on the breeze. The Lincoln pulled away, and Lois started up her walk. Halfway along it, she stopped and turned. For a long moment, the two of them regarded each other from their opposite sides of Harris Avenue, seeing perfectly well in spite of the deepening darkness and the 200 yards which separated them. They burned for each other in that darkness like secret torches. Lois pointed a finger at him. It was very close to the hand gesture she had made before shooting at Dock Number 3, but this didn't upset Ralph in the least. Intent, he thought. Everything lies in intent. There are few mistakes in this world, and once you get to know your way around, maybe there are no mistakes at all. A narrow, gray, glistening beam of force appeared at the end of Lois's finger and began to extend itself across the deepening shadows of Harris Avenue. A passing car drove blithely through it. The car's windows flashed a momentary bright, blind gray, and its headlights seemed to flicker briefly, but that was all. Ralph raised his own finger, and a blue beam grew from it. These two narrow casts of light met in the center of Harris Avenue and twined together like woodbine. Higher and higher the interwoven pigtail rose, paling slightly as it went. Then Ralph curled his finger, and his half of the love knot in the middle of Harris Avenue winked out of existence. A moment later, Lois's half also disappeared. Ralph slowly descended the porch steps and began to cross his lawn. Lois came toward him. They met in the middle of the street, where, in a very real sense, they had met already. Ralph put his arms around her waist and kissed her.
You look different, Roberts. Younger, somehow.
Those words kept running through his head, recycling themselves like an endless tape loop, as Ralph sat in Lois's kitchen drinking coffee. He was unable to take his eyes off her. She looked easily 10 years younger and 10 pounds lighter than the Lois he'd gotten used to seeing over the last few years. Had she looked this young and pretty in the park this morning? Ralph didn't think so. But of course she'd been upset this morning, upset and crying, and he supposed that made a difference. Still, yes, still. The tiny networks of wrinkles around the corners of her mouth were gone. So were the incipient turkey wattles beneath her neck and the sag of flesh which had begun to hang from her upper arms. She'd been crying this morning and was radiantly happy tonight. But Ralph knew that couldn't account for all the changes he saw.
I know what you're looking at, Lois said. It's spooky, isn't it? I mean, it solves the question of whether or not all this has just been in our minds. But it's still spooky. We've found the fountain of youth. Forget Florida, it was right here in Derry all along.
We've found it? For a moment she only looked surprised, and a little wary, as if she suspected he was teasing her, having her on, of treating her as our Lois. Then she reached across the table and squeezed his hand. Go into the bathroom. Take a look at yourself.
I know what I look like. Hell, I just finished shaving. Took my time over it, too.
She nodded. You did a fine job, Ralph, but this isn't about your 5 o'clock shadow. Just look at yourself.
Are you serious?
Yes, she said firmly. I am.
He'd almost gotten to the door when she said,
You didn't just shave. You changed your shirt, too.
That's good. I didn't like to say anything, but that plaid one was ripped.
Was it? Ralph asked. His back was to her, so she couldn't see his smile.
I didn't notice.
He stood with his hands braced on the bathroom sink, looking into his own face for a good 2 minutes. It took him that long to admit to himself that he was really seeing what he thought he was seeing. The streaks of black, lustrous as crow feathers, which had returned to his hair, were amazing, and so was the disappearance of the ugly pouches beneath his eyes. But the thing he could not seem to take his eyes away from was the way the lines and deep cracks had disappeared from his lips. It was a small thing,
but it was also an enormous thing. It was the mouth of a young man. And abruptly, Ralph ran a finger into his mouth, along the right-hand line of his lower teeth. He couldn't be entirely positive, but it seemed to him that they were longer, as if some of the wear had been rolled back. "Holy shit," Ralph murmured, and his mind returned to that sweltering day last summer when he had confronted Ed Deepnow on his lawn. Ed had first told him to drag up a rock, and then confided in him that Derry had been invaded by sinister, baby-killing creatures. Life-stealing creatures. "All lines of force have begun to converge here," Ed had told him. "I know how difficult that is to believe, but it's true." Ralph was finding it less difficult to believe all the time. What was getting harder to believe was the idea that Ed was mad. "If this doesn't stop," Lois said from the doorway, startling him, "we're going to have to get married and leave town, Ralph. Simone and Minna could not, literally could not, take their eyes off me. I made a lot of glib talk about some new makeup I'd gotten out at the mall, but they didn't swallow it. A man would, but a woman knows what makeup can do, and what it can't." They walked back to the kitchen, and although the auras were gone again for the time being, Ralph discovered that he could see one anyway, a blush rising out of the collar of Lois's white silk blouse. "Finally, I told them the only thing they would believe." "What was that?" Ralph asked. "I said I'd met a man." She hesitated, and then as the rising blood reached her cheeks and stained them pink, she plunged. "And had fallen in love with him." He touched her arm and turned her toward him. He looked at the small, clean crease in the bend of her elbow and thought how much he would like to touch it with his mouth, or the tip of his tongue, perhaps. Then he raised his eyes to look at her. And was it true? She looked back with eyes that were all hope and candor. "I think so," she said in a small, clear voice. "But everything's so strange now. All I know for sure is that I want it to be true. I want a friend. I've been frightened and unhappy and lonely for quite a while now. The loneliness is the worst part of getting old, I think. Not the aches and pains, not the cranky bowels, or the way you lose your breath after climbing a flight of stairs you could have just about flown up when you were 20. But being lonely." "Yes," Ralph said, "that is the worst. No one talks to you anymore. Or they talk at you sometimes, but that's not the same. And mostly it's like people don't even see you. Have you ever felt that way?" Ralph thought of the Derry of the old Crocs, a city mostly ignored by the hurry-to-work, hurry-to-play world which surrounded it, and nodded. "Ralph, would you hug me?" "My pleasure," he said, and pulled her gently into the circle of his arms. Sometime later, rumpled and dazed but happy, Ralph and Lois sat together on the living room couch, a piece of furniture so stringently hobbit-sized it was really not much more than a love seat. Neither of them minded. Ralph's arm was around Lois's shoulders. She had let her hair down, and he twined a lock of it in his fingers, musing upon how easy it was to forget the feel of a woman's hair, so marvelously different from the feel of a man's. She had told him about her card game, and Ralph had listened closely, amazed but not, he discovered, much surprised. There were a dozen or so of them who played every week or so at the Ludlow Grange for small stakes. It was possible to go home a 5-buck loser or a 10-buck winner, but the most likely result was finishing a dollar ahead or a handful of change behind. Although there were a couple of good players and a couple of schlumps, Lois counted herself among the former, it was mostly just a fun way to spend an afternoon. The lady old croc version of chess tournaments and marathon gin rummy games. "Only this afternoon I just couldn't lose. I should have come home completely broke, what with all of them asking about what kind of vitamins I was taking and where I'd gotten my last facial and all the rest of it. Who can concentrate on a silly game like deuces and jacks, man with the axe, natural sevens take all, when you have to keep telling new lies and trying not to trip over the ones you've already told?" "Must have been hard," Ralph said, trying not to grin. "It was very hard, but instead of losing, I just kept raking it in. And do you know why, Ralph?" He He did, but shook his head so she would tell him. He liked listening to her. It was their auras. I didn't always know the exact cards they were holding, but a lot of times I did. Even when I didn't, I could get a pretty clear idea of how good their hands were. The auras weren't always there, you know how they come and go, but even when they were gone, I played better than I ever have in my life. During the last hour, I began to lose on purpose, just so they wouldn't all hate me. And do you know something? Even losing on purpose was hard. She looked down at her hands, which had begun to twine together nervously in her lap. And on the way back, I did something I'm ashamed of. Ralph began to glimpse her aura again, a dim gray ghost in which unformed blobs of dark blue swirled. "Before you tell me," he said, "listen to this and see if it sounds familiar." He related how Mrs. Perrine had approached while he was sitting on the porch, eating and waiting for Lois to get back. As he told her what he had done to the old lady, he dropped his eyes and felt his ears heating up again. "Yes," she said when he was finished. "It's the same thing I did. But I didn't mean to, Ralph. At least I don't think I meant to. I was sitting in the back seat with Minna, and she was starting to go on and on again about how different I looked, how young I looked, and I thought, I'm embarrassed to say it right out loud, but I guess I better. I thought, I'll shut you up, you snoopy, envious old thing. Because it was envy, Ralph. I could see it in her aura. Big, jagged spikes the exact color of a cat's eyes. No wonder they called jealousy the green-eyed monster. Anyway, I pointed out the window and said, 'Ooh, Minna, isn't that the dearest little house?' And when she turned to look, I did what you did, Ralph. Only I didn't curl up my hand. I just kind of puckered my lips, like this." She demonstrated, looking so kissable that Ralph felt moved, almost compelled, in fact, to take advantage of the expression. "And I breathed in a big cloud of her stuff." "What happened?" Ralph asked, fascinated and afraid. Lois laughed ruefully. "To me or her?" "Both of you." Minna jumped and slapped the back of her neck. "There's a bug on me," she said. "It bit me. Get it off, Lo. Please get it off." Of course, there was no bug on her. I was the bug. But I brushed at her neck just the same, then opened the window and told her it was gone. It flew away. She was lucky I didn't knock her brains out instead of just brushing her neck. That's how full of pep I was. I felt like I could have opened the car door and run all the way home. Ralph nodded. "It was wonderful. Too wonderful. It's like the stories about drugs you see on TV. How they take you to heaven at first and then lock you in hell. What if we start doing this and can't stop?" "Yeah," Ralph said. "And what if it hurts people? I keep thinking about vampires." "Do you know what I keep thinking about?" Lois's voice had dropped to a whisper. "Those things you said Ed Deepnote talked about. Those centurions. What if they're us, Ralph? What if they're us?" He hugged her and kissed the top of her head. Hearing his worst fear coming from her mouth made it less heavy on his own heart. And that made him think of what Lois had said about loneliness being the worst part of getting old. "I know," he said. "And what I did to Mrs. Perrine was totally spur of the moment. I don't remember thinking about it at all, just doing it. Was it that way with you?" "Yes, just like that." She laid her head against his shoulder. "We can't do it anymore," he said, "because it really might be addictive. Anything that feels that good just about has to be addictive, don't you think? We've got to try and build up some safeguards against doing it unconsciously, too, because I think I have been. That could be why..." A scream of brakes and sliding, wailing tires cut him off. They stared at each other wide-eyed, as outside on the street that sound went on and on, grief seeming to search for a point of impact. There was a muffled thud from the street as the scream of the brakes and tires silenced. It was followed by a brief cry uttered by either a woman or a child. Ralph could not tell which. Someone else shouted, "What happened?" And then, "Oh, cripe!" There was a rattle of running footsteps on pavement. "Stay on the couch," Ralph said, and hurried to the living room window. When he ran up the shade, Lois was standing right beside him, and Ralph felt a flash of approval. It was what Carolyn would have done under similar circumstances. They looked out on a nighttime world that pulsed with strange color and fabulous motion. Ralph knew it was Bill they were going to see. Knew it. Bill hit by a car and lying dead in the street, his Panama with a crescent bitten out of the brim lying near one outstretched hand. He slipped an arm around Lois and she gripped his hand. But it wasn't McGovern in the fan of headlights thrown by the Ford which had slewed around in the middle of Harris Avenue. It was Rosalie. Her early morning shopping expeditions were at an end. She lay on her side in a spreading pool of blood, her back bunched and twisted in several places. As the driver of the car which had struck her knelt beside the old stray, the pitiless glare of the nearest street lamp illuminated his face. It was Joe Weiser, the Rite Aid druggist, his orange-yellow aura now swirling with confused eddies of red and blue. He stroked the old dog's side, and each time his hand slipped into the vile black aura which clung to Rosalie, it disappeared. Dreams of terror washed through Ralph, dropping his temperature and shriveling his testicles until they felt like hard little peach pits. Suddenly it was July of 1992 again. Carolyn dying, the death watch ticking, and something weird had happened to Ed Deepnow. Ed had freaked out, and Ralph had found himself trying to keep Helen's normally good-natured husband from springing at the man in the West Side gardener's cap and attempting to rip his throat out. Then, the cherry on the Charlotte Russe, Carol would have said. Doran's Ma Stella had arrived. Old Dar. And what did he say? I wouldn't touch him anymore. I can't see your hands. I can't see your hands. Oh, my God, Ralph whispered. He was brought back to the here and now by the feeling of Lois swaying against him, as if she were on the edge of a faint. Lois, he said sharply, gripping her arm. Lois, are you okay?
I think so, but Ralph, do you see?
Yes, it's Rosalie. I guess she...
I don't mean her. I mean him. She pointed to the right.
Dock number 3 was leaning against the trunk of Joe Weiser's Ford. McGovern's Panama tipped jauntily back on his bald skull. He looked toward Ralph and Lois, grinned insolently, then slowly raised his thumb to his nose and waggled his small fingers at them.
You bastard!
Ralph bellowed and slammed his fist against the wall beside the window in frustration. Half a dozen people were running toward the scene of the accident, but there was nothing they could do. Rosalie would be dead before even the closest of them arrived at the place where she lay in the glare of the car's headlights. The black aura was solidifying, becoming something which looked almost like soot-darkened brick. It encased her like a form-fitting shroud, and Weiser's hand disappeared up to the wrist every time it slipped through that terrible garment. Now Doc number 3 raised his hand, with a forefinger sticking up, and cocked his head. A teacherly pantomime, so good that it almost said, "Pay attention, please," right out loud. He tiptoed forward, unnecessary as he couldn't be seen by the people out there, but good theater, and reached toward Joe Weiser's back pocket. He glanced around at Ralph and Lois, as if to ask them if they were still paying attention. Then he began to tiptoe forward again, reaching out with his left hand.
"Stop him, Ralph," Lois moaned. "Oh, please stop him."
Slowly, like a man who has been drugged, Ralph raised his hand and then chopped it down. A blue wedge of light flew from his fingertips, but it diffused as it passed through the window glass. A pastel fog spread out a little distance from Lois's house and then disappeared. The ball doctor shook his finger in an infuriating pantomime.
"Oh, you naughty boy," it said.
Doc number 3 reached out again and plucked something from Weiser's back pocket as he knelt in the street mourning the dog. Ralph couldn't tell for sure what it was until the creature in the dirty smock swept McGovern's hat from his head and pretended to use it on his own non-existent hair. He had taken a black pocket comb, the kind you could buy in any convenience store for $1.29. Then he leaped into the air, clicking his heels like a malignant elf. Rosalie had raised her head at the bald doctor's approach. Now she lowered it back to the pavement and died. The aura surrounding her disappeared at once,
not fading but simply winking out of existence, like a soap bubble. Weiser got to his feet, turned to a man standing on the curb, and began to tell him what had happened, gesturing with his hands to indicate how the dog had run out in front of his car. Ralph found he could actually read a string of 6 words as they came off Weiser's lips. "Seemed to come out of nowhere." And when Ralph shifted his gaze back down to the side of Weiser's car, he saw that was the place to which the little bald doctor had returned. Ralph was able to get his rust-buckered Oldsmobile started, but it still took him 20 minutes to get them across town to Derry Home on the east side. Carolyn had understood his increasing worries about his driving and had tried to be sympathetic, but she had had an impatient hurry-up streak in her nature, and the years had not mellowed it much. On trips longer than a half mile or so, she was almost always unable to keep from lapsing into reproof. She would stew in silence for a while, thinking, then begin her critique. If she was particularly exasperated with their progress, or lack of it, she might ask him if he thought an enema would help him get the lead out of his ass. She was a sweetheart, but there had always been an edge to her tongue. Following such remarks, Ralph would always offer, and always without rancor, to pull over and let her drive. Such offers Carol had always declined. Her belief was that, on short hops at least, it was the husband's job to drive and the wife's to offer constructive criticism. He kept waiting for Lois to comment on either his speed or his sloppy driving habits. He didn't think he would be able to remember his blinkers with any consistency these days, even if someone put a gun to his head. But she said nothing, only sat where Carolyn had sat on 5,000 rides or more, holding her purse on her lap, exactly as Carolyn had always held hers. Wedges of light, store neon, traffic signals, street lights, ran like rainbows across Lois's cheeks and brows. Her dark eyes were distant and thoughtful. She had cried after Rosalie died, cried hard, and made Ralph pull down the shade again. Ralph almost hadn't done that. His first impulse had been to bolt out into the street before Joe Weiser could get away. To tell Joe he had to be very careful. To tell him that when he emptied his pants pockets tonight, he was going to be missing a cheap comb. No big deal. People were always losing combs. Except this time it was a big deal. And next time it might be Rite Aid pharmacist Joe Weiser lying at the end of the skid. "Listen to me, Joe, and listen closely. You have to be very careful, because there's all sorts of news from the hyper-reality zone. And in your case, all of it comes inside black borders." There were problems with that, however. The biggest was that Joe Weiser, sympathetic as he had been on the day he had gotten Ralph an appointment with the acupuncturist, would think Ralph was crazy. Besides, how did one defend oneself against a creature one couldn't even see? So he had pulled the shade. But before he did, he took one last hard look at the man who had told him he used to be Joe Wise, but was now older and wiser. The auras were still there, and he could see Wise's balloon string, a bright orange-yellow, rising intact from the top of his head. So he was still all right. For now, at least. Ralph had led Lois into the kitchen and poured her another cup of coffee, black with lots of sugar. "He killed her, didn't he?" she asked as she raised the cup to her lips with both hands. "The little beast killed her." "Yes, but I don't think he did it tonight. I think he really did it this morning." "Why? Why?" "Because he could," Ralph said grimly. "I think that's the only reason he needs. Just because he could." Lois had given him a long, appraising look, and an expression of relief had slowly crept into her eyes. "You figured it out, haven't you? I should have known it the minute I saw you this evening. I would have known if I hadn't had so many other things rolling around in what passes for my mind." "Figured it out? I'm miles from that, but I have had some ideas. Lois, do you feel up to a trip to Derry Home with me?"
"I suppose so.
Do you want to see Bill?"
I'm not sure exactly who I want to see. It might be Bill, but it might be Bill's friend, Bob Paulhurst. Maybe even Jimmy Vandermeer. Do you know him?
Jimmy V? Of course I know him.
I knew his wife even better. In fact, she used to play poker with us until she died. It was a heart attack, and so sudden. She broke off suddenly, looking at Ralph with her dark Spanish eyes.
Jimmy's in the hospital? Oh, God, it's the cancer, isn't it? The cancer came back?
Yes, he's in the room right next to Bill's friend. Ralph told her about the conversation he'd had with Faye that morning and the note he'd found on the picnic table that afternoon. He pointed out the odd conjunction of rooms and residents. Paulhurst, Jimmy V, Carolyn, and asked Lois if she thought it was just a coincidence.
No, I'm sure it isn't.
She had glanced at the clock.
Come on, regular visiting hours over there finish at 9:30, I think. If we're going to get there before then, we'd better wiggle.
Now, as he turned onto Hospital Drive...
Forgot your damn turn blinker again, sweetheart, Carolyn commented.
He glanced at Lois. Lois sitting there with her hands clasped on her purse and her aura invisible for the time being, and asked if she was all right. She nodded.
Yes, not great, but okay. Don't worry about me.
But I do worry, Lois, Ralph thought, a lot. And by the way, did you see Doc Number 3 take the comb out of Joe Weiser's pocket? That was a stupid question. Of course she'd seen. The bald midget had wanted her to see, had wanted both of them to see. The real question was how much significance she had attached to it.
How much do you really know, Lois? How many connections have you made? I have to wonder, because they're not really that hard to see.
I wonder, but I'm afraid to ask. There was a low brick building about a quarter of a mile farther down the feeder road. Woman care. A number of spotlights. New additions, he was quite sure. Threw fans of illumination across its lawn, and Ralph could see two men walking back and forth at the end of grotesquely elongated shadows. Rent-a-cops, he supposed. Another new wrinkle. Another straw flying in an evil wind. He turned left, this time remembering the blinker at least, and eased the Olds carefully up the chute which led into the multi-level hospital parking garage. At the top, an orange barrier arm blocked the way. "Please stop and take ticket," read the sign next to it. Ralph could recall a time when there used to be actual people in places like this, rendering them a little less eerie.
"Those were the days, my friend. We thought they'd never end," he thought, as he unrolled his window and took a ticket from the automated dispenser.
"Ralph?"
"Hmm?"
He was concentrating on avoiding the back bumpers of the cars slant parked on both sides of the ascending aisles. He knew that the aisles were much too wide for the bumpers of those other cars to be an actual impediment to his progress. Intellectually, he knew it. But what his guts knew was something else. "How Carolyn would bitch and moan about the way I'm driving," he thought, with a certain distracted fondness.
"Do you know what we're doing here, or are we just winging it?"
"Just another minute. Let me get this damn thing parked."
He passed several slots big enough for the Olds on the first level, but none with enough buffer zone to make him feel comfortable. On the third level, he found three spaces side by side. Together they were big enough to hold a Sherman tank comfortably. And babied the Olds into the one in the middle. He killed the motor and turned to face Lois. Other engines idled above and below them, their locations impossible to pinpoint because of the echo. Orange light, that persistent, penetrating tone glow now common to all such facilities as this, it seemed, lay upon their skins like thin, toxic paint. Lois looked back at him steadily. He could see traces of the tears she had cried for Rosalie in her puffy, swollen lids, but the eyes themselves were calm and sure. He was struck by how much she had changed just since that morning when he had found her sitting slump-shouldered on a park bench and weeping. "Lois," he thought, "if your son and daughter-in-law could see you tonight, I think they might run away screaming at the top of their lungs. Not because you look scary, but because the woman they came to bulldoze into moving to Riverview Estates is gone." "Well?" she asked with just a hint of a smile. Are you going to talk to me or just look at me?
Ralph, ordinarily a cautious sort of man, recklessly said the first thing to come into his head.
What I'd like to do, I think, is eat you like ice cream.
Her smile deepened enough to make dimples at the corners of her mouth.
Maybe later we'll see how much of an appetite for ice cream you really have, Ralph. For now, just tell me why you brought me here. And don't tell me you don't know, because I think you do.
Ralph closed his eyes, drew in a deep breath, and opened them again.
I guess we're here to find the other two bald guys. The ones I saw coming out of May lockers. If anyone can explain what's going on, it'll be them.
What makes you think you'll find them here?
I think they've got work to do. Two men, Jimmy V and Bill's friend, dying side by side. I should have known what the bald doctors are, what they do, from the minute I saw the ambulance guys bring Mrs. Locker out strapped to a stretcher and with a sheet over her face. I would have known if I hadn't been so damn tired. The scissors should have been enough. Instead, it took me until this afternoon, and I only got it then because of something Mr. Paul Hurst's niece said.
What was it?
That death was stupid. That if an obstetrician took as much time cutting the umbilical cord, he'd be sued for malpractice.
It made me think of a myth I read when I was in grade school and couldn't get enough of gods and goddesses and Trojan horses. The story was about three sisters. The Greek sisters, maybe, or maybe it was the weird sisters.
Shit, don't ask me. I can't even remember to use my damn turn blinkers half the time.
Anyway, these sisters were responsible for the course of all human life. One of them spun the thread. One of them decided how long it would be. Is any of this ringing a bell, Lois?
Of course it is, she nearly shouted. The balloon strings.
Ralph nodded. Yes, the balloon strings. I don't remember the names of the first two sisters, but I never forgot the name of the last one. Atropos.
And according to the story, her job is to cut the thread the first one spins and the second one measures. You could argue with her. You could beg, but it never made any difference. When she decided it was time to cut, she cut.
Lois was nodding. Yes, I remember that story. I don't know if I read it or someone told it to me when I was a kid. You believe it's actually true, Ralph, don't you? Only it turns out to be the bald brothers instead of the weird sisters.
Yes and no. As I remember the story, the sisters were all on the same side, a team. And that's the feeling I got about the two men who came out of Mrs. Locker's house, that they were longtime partners with immense respect for each other. But the other guy, the one we saw again tonight, isn't like them. I think Doc Number 3's a rogue.
Lois shivered, a theatrical gesture that became real at the last moment.
He's awful, Ralph. I hate him.
I don't blame you.
He reached for the door handle, but Lois stopped him with a touch.
I saw him do something.
Ralph turned and looked at her. The tendons in his neck creaked rustily. He had a pretty good idea what she was going to say.
He picked the pocket of the man who hit Rosalie, she said. While he was kneeling beside her in the street, the bald man picked his pocket. Except all he took was a comb. And the hat that bald man was wearing, I'm pretty sure I recognized it.
Ralph went on looking at her, fervently hoping that Lois's memory of Doc Number 3's apparel did not extend any further.
It was Bill's, wasn't it? Bill's Panama.
Ralph nodded. Sure it was.
Lois closed her eyes.
Oh, Lord.
What do you say, Lois? Are you still game?
Yes.
She opened her door and swung her legs out. But let's get going right away, before I lose my nerve.
Tell me about it, said Ralph Roberts.